Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Houston, Texas, what I personally believe is the most awesome and beautiful city in the world. And you're right here in my home. The sun just went down the Texas Medical Center behind me. It was shining right about there just a couple minutes ago. We were on doing the pre-interview about 5 minutes before the show went live. And so the coloring's a little different. But as you see, as the show progresses, it will become completely nighttime here in Houston. I just want to let you know that it's just a joy to have you, and I appreciate you joining in with us this evening. We've always said, and we're getting ready to, I believe, experience our five-year anniversary of having this show in a couple months, and we're going to have a big time during the month of August celebrating that. But in those times, I've always indicated that if you will just allow 45, 50 minutes, an hour with us each Sunday night, I really try hard to get guests on here that are quality, top quality, that's going to give you something that's going to be able to help you with your own personal life sometime this week, sometime with a friend, maybe with a coworker, with your spouse. Maybe you're just having a low time right now. And we have one of those guests tonight that's going to be able to help you learn how to maybe develop, how to be able to get through some tough times, to be able to not say, no, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep on keeping on. And I'm going to make something of myself, no matter how bad the start was, because it doesn't really matter, does it, where we start? It just kind of matters where we finish and how we get there. And if we can keep our integrity intact for that, there's a couple ways to get involved tonight. I just want to share with you. First of all, you can call the awesome people at BBS Radio at 888-627-6008. And TJ is right there on the panel, and he will patch you right through to our guest and myself tonight. And we will bring you on live with us if you have a question or a comment. Or you can get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, and I'm looking at it right now. It looks like we are up and running. And my son, Curtis, out in Seattle, Washington, with the United States Army, is running that for me tonight. I know nothing about all. I hardly know how to turn a computer on, let alone get on Facebook. But he helps me with that. You know, the older, the more gray I get, the less qualified I am to do anything in technology. Or you can actually call me or text me is the best way to do it right here on my cell phone at 832-396-6525 during this next hour that we're live. And during the commercial break, I will check it, and then I'll be glad to read your question or comment during the next segment at the bottom of the hour. I always like to start off with something that is going on in my world, something that I want to share, maybe I've learned. And I won't take too long because we have an awesome, awesome author on tonight. But it seems like sometimes you can go to Barnes & Noble right now, you get on Amazon, and you can just type in the word resiliency or resilience, and you'll be able to get 500 books, boom, of how to find it. I don't believe that. I don't believe there is a finding of resiliency. I believe resiliency is already built inside of you. You are already wired to be able to handle what life has brought into your path, what life has done to you. You know, I have people a lot of times say, "Great, how did you make it through what you went through during all those years of abuse?" It wasn't that I read a book or watched a good Oprah workshop or got Dr. Phil on the phone and talked to him about it. It was the fact that I discovered what was already in me. And I want you to catch that, because it's already in you, the power for you to be able to endure what you're going through this very second in your life is inside of you. And if you've, you know, I've always say this, if you're going through hell right now, just don't stop. Winston Churchill said that, just keep on going and moving in the right direction. And there's a couple things that I've learned this week that I just want to share with you when it deals with this resiliency thought, how to get through some stuff. One is I try to discover a purpose. Why am I going through this is the question we ask a lot. But instead of saying why, maybe we should say, what can I learn from going through this? What is the purpose that I can be able to experience from what I'm going through to be able to help other people out? So instead of being discouraged by my problems, I try to define a purpose of those problems and then use those purposes not as a backpack to weigh me down, but as a stepping stone to lift me up. And in that, I need to build a support system. And your inner circle of friends and people that you can trust are key to your success. And I can't wait to find out how our guest tonight made it through some tough times and became one of the most successful women in our country. How did that happen? And then speak out maybe to a movement of what you've learned to be able to share that. And then what I find out is most healing is I try to serve as many people as I can. How can I help one more person? And tonight I'm trying to help one more person. But, you know, before the radio show, I was on some phone calls trying to help and grab hands with somebody and help them on their journey. So find a sense of purpose. And I know maybe if you're in your darkest night right now, you're saying, "Greg, what in the world? I don't have time to help people. I can't even help myself." I'm with you. Been there, done that. But as surely as this sun is going down behind me and it's going to get dark, I promise you, tomorrow morning, it's going to get light again. Believe also in your abilities. You are wired. You are a masterpiece. You are a treasure of talent. You have things that you can do that you need to be able to reach down and grab deep inside of you. And you need to have confidence in you that you can do it. You can handle this. You can get through this. This isn't the end. We had a huge storm. And here I am in a glassed in home. That's glassed all the way around my home. And there was tornadoes in Houston that you've probably seen on the TV and the radio that just literally shattered buildings like this downtown, just a few blocks away. Tornadoes in Cypress. And matter of fact, the doors of my unit here was literally knocking. It's just boom, 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 like somebody was inside trying to get out because of the pressure and the storm when that dark cloud came. But I knew without a shadow of a doubt that that storm was eventually going to end. Whatever you're going through, it's going to eventually break through. The rain's going to stop, and you're going to be able to say, "Wow, that was a tough one. Now, what did I learn? How can I get through this? How do I make it another day?" And you have that ability inside of you. And then three, you need to embrace change. Flexibility is huge. I'm one of those, I have a middle initial A. It doesn't sometimes stand for Alan in my name. I think it stands for anal, because I am so anal sometimes that I want everything to be exactly the same all the time. It's just not going to be that way. I don't like change. Flexibility is huge to be able to make it. And I need to be, and I've learned this week, I need to try to be, anyway, more adaptable. And flexibility will help you out. Don't be so rigid. Allow yourself a little bit of flexibility and then try to be as optimistic as you can. Negativity breeds negativity. Optimism, positivity will breed positive. So when you wake up in the morning, if you're filling yourself up with negative stuff on your phone and trying to find out how many people liked you or commented on your Facebook entry, that wouldn't be a good way to start the day. I suggest you start your day with doing something that's important to you, which is the next point here, is taking care of yourself. Mindfulness is huge. Don't jump into allowing other people to drag you down before you ever put your feet on the floor in the morning from your bed. Fill yourself with something that's positive. Read books like our guest tonight that's going to be able to encourage you that no matter how bad it was, no matter how bad the deck was that was handed to them, they made it through it. And look how life turned out for her. We'll bring her in here just in a second. And then learn how to develop some problem-solving skills. Try different strategies. The same thing doesn't always help and fix the same problem every time. Small steps and goals. And probably one of the things that I think encourages people that they forget sometimes, especially when grief has entered into their life, is you need to take action. A lot of time when somebody comes in and something happens into your life where you lose a loved one, a spouse, a child, a mom or dad, we immediately shut down. We immediately sit in a room by ourselves and turn the lights off. We don't shower anymore. We don't wash our hair. We don't take care of ourselves. And we let that spiral down. It's huge to take action. So tomorrow morning, as you start a new week, make sure you take deliberate action of taking two steps forward. Baby steps is all right, because as long as you're moving forward, you can be able to make progress. Keep on keeping on and discover what you have inside of a wonderful treasure that you are to be able to be and get through no matter what you are dealing with right now in life. Okay, that's enough of my soapbox. I'll kick that out of the way. And I want to bring in our guest tonight, Barbara Feigen. She is a graduate from Whitman College, earning a bachelor's degree in political science, and completed a graduate program in business administration through jointly by Harvard Business School and Radcliffe Graduate School. In her 30 years of just an unbelievable, spectacular career with Gray Advertising, now Gray Global Group, she solidified her reputation as somebody very visionary, special, and was second to none in her field. In all of her years as an advertising, senior advertising executive and a corporate director, she was more often than not the only woman in the room. In 2017, Barbara was named one of the century's legendary pioneers by Gray, and she has written an unbelievable book. And I want to bring Barbara Feigen into the picture right now. So Barbara, welcome to the program. And while you're coming in and everybody can see you, I want to let everybody see this beautiful, beautiful book. Good evening, Barbara. How are you, my dear?
Hi, how are you? So good to hear you speak. You've inspired me already.
Well, I can't wait to get inside of your awesome brain and spirit to find out what, first of all, we'll ask questions, but what enticed you to write it? Is it the outcome you wanted? I have so many questions, and they may not be questions that you're normally asked. But welcome to the program tonight. Thank you for joining us, because it's almost bedtime for you, because you are in New York, correct?
That's right. That's right.
You're in New York City?
It's a pleasure to be here. It's great to be with you.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. Well, what city are you in, New York?
In Manhattan.
In Manhattan? I only dream about getting to go to Manhattan. Oh, but you live there.
I live there, and I love it. It's great.
Fantastic. Can I ask you, right off the get-go, because of your upbringing, and you have no idea what I'm going to ask, correct?
Right.
Because we don't get on early. We don't talk early. We don't have pre-interviews. I like live radio.
Fire away. What's your
opinion on what's going on in this world right now, Barbara, with our college campuses, with what's happening to everything that's happening in anti-Semitism and all of this? I don't understand it. I sit back and just shake my head. What's this do to you, your spirit, and what kind of wisdom do you have of what's going on and why it's going on in our country right now? Do you have any insight?
Oh my goodness, those are huge questions, very yeah. complicated questions. Well, let me step back and start with the fact that I, together with my parents, escaped from Nazi Germany in July of 1940 when I was 2 years old. So my family really experienced the war and what it can do to a family, so I kind of know about this from a personal vantage point. My father was Jewish, my mother was Lutheran, and we got out of Germany after, my father's frantic efforts to make it possible for us to escape at this very late date. But his parents remained in Germany and ultimately were murdered in the concentration camps. So as you can imagine, I kind of view what's going on in the world from that vantage point, and I find it, what's the word? Disheartening is too soft a word. It's very, very, very distressing. And, I just don't wish this on anyone. And I hope that we can find solutions. You talk in your intro about, finding a way to go forward and going one step at a time. And I think we have to really appreciate the importance of freedom, the freedom that we have as Americans. This is a precious thing. And, we have to do everything that we can to really protect it. I really can answer it only from my own perspective and my own life experience. I hope and pray that we can find our way out of this situation that we're in, that the world is in.
Do you think these folks that are doing this and that are rioting in communities and on college campuses, do you think they have the educational background of what they're really even fighting against or complaining against? Or do you think it's just every generation or two, rebellion has to, a civil war has to kind of come up? But I just don't know if they really understand what they are even protesting against.
Well, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that either. One of the hopeful outcomes of my book for people who read it is that I hope they're educated to some extent as to what real problems can be with anti-Semitism. And I hope that I think there are a lot of people, young people today, who don't know about the Holocaust, don't even know the word. And I hope that there'll be an educational aspect to to my story.
Well, it's so beautiful. I mean, you have pictures, I learned a lot. And, you know, we have the Holocaust Museum just a few blocks away over here in the Medical Center Museum Center right across Harris County Park here. And it's unbelievable when you walk through that. And it's almost like, how can people react the way they are now, knowing what really happened, and then for them to deny that it even happened, to me is even more salt on the wounds of what you know for a fact, because you lived through it. It affected every fiber in your being.
Right, right. No, I, you know, just as I said before, I think a lot of people don't really know, haven't really internalized what that was all about, what the Holocaust was all about. Yeah. They might have heard of it, they might know the word, etc. But you know, that's why I think telling the story from a personal vantage point of, you know, a family who actually lived through it. And you know, as I say, your intro was very inspiring, because it kind of took me back to some of the things that my parents went through when they, first of all, were trying to get out of Germany, and then ultimately ended up in America with absolutely nothing, only the clothes on their backs, the few things they could carry, including a tent, because they thought we might have to live in this tent if all else failed, and $10.50 for our entire family. And they had no idea how they would make a life for us here in America. My parents had no connections, no money, no job, no friends, no relatives, no idea. But they were elated to be in the land of the free, where they could be who they wanted to be, they could say what they wanted to say, they could read what they wanted to read, they could go where they wanted to go, and they could strive for whatever it was that they ultimately wanted to achieve. And they did all those things through really tough challenges and lots of, you know, roadblocks along the way. But back to your intro, my parents both were not just courageous and brave to go through what they went through. They were very determined and had great perseverance. And through it all, they were optimistic. They always worked toward their goals, and they were very, very resilient. And as you were saying, you know, resilience comes from inside of oneself, but you have to sort of bring it out and right, use it and make it work for you. And I really learned that from my parents as they went through really horrifically difficult times.
Now, this is actually you. This is a picture that, if I'm reading everything right, this is you.
You mean this, the picture August in the front 4th, of the book?
Yeah, on 1940, yes. Right?
Yeah.
This was in the Seattle Times of this toddler that is you. On
that
the dock, surrounded by suitcases. And is this the journey after, on your way in America?
Well, our journey, you know, we left Berlin very, very late in July of 1940, which was really at the onset of World War II. And my father was frantic trying to find the appropriate documentation, the appropriate visas and sponsors and money for passage and so on to get us out. And he had a very difficult time doing that. So by the time we finally were able to leave, he got everything together. It was no longer possible to go across the Atlantic Ocean. There were too many German submarines there, so there were no ships going to America. So we had to go on a train from Berlin. There were, I should say, you know, in addition to the three of us, there were 79 other refugees. The oldest was a woman who was 81 years old, and I was the youngest. And we went on this train on a terrifying, terrifying, horrific trip from Berlin through Lithuania, through Russia, including Siberia, through China, Korea, and finally to Japan. This was a 17-day trip. It was horrible, and I never knew any of the details about it until very recently, when my sister discovered a journal that my father had kept through the run-up to the escape and through the escape itself. I knew that we'd escape, but my parents never spoke of the details, so I knew nothing about this. And the trip was so frightening and so terrifying. The train trip took 17 days, and the train was stopped 14 times. And each time the train was stopped, my parents had to show all their documentation. At times, their luggage was searched, and they were terrified that they would be taken off the trains, and who knows what would have happened to them at that point. So there were times when they had no food, nothing to drink, and they were afraid to spend their money because they only had this $10.50 for their entry in America. So anyway, when we finally got to Yokohama, Japan, we took a Japanese ship called the Hikawa Maru across the Pacific Ocean. And that was a 14-day trip across the Pacific. And we landed in Seattle. And the picture on the front of my book is me on the dock in Seattle on the morning that we landed there. I'm as you say, surrounded by the few little suitcases that my parents were able to carry. And there I am. And that was there was a story about our group of refugees in the Seattle Times, and that picture accompanied the story.
And look at it here. Here's the picture of your immigration card. This book is absolutely gorgeous. This will be good either if you get the paperback, which is what I have, the hardback, the one you have, or this is also in Kindle, right? An ebook?
Yes, definitely.
Which would be really, you could really probably see the visuals of that, these pictures even better. But there you are, just smiling. And what's your age here?
Two. Yeah.
Wow. So what was the gut of, because we're going to take a break, so I'll just start with a prelude on this a little bit. But what was the gut inside of you when you finally discovered, wait, since mom and dad didn't talk about this, you have a book handwritten by your dad, a journal that,
right.
Was it an everyday type of journaling? Was it, hey, we're in this country, we're at this city, we're traveling here, this is what they've asked us to do? How detailed was that journal, and what did that do inside of you when you started reading your life story coming live to you?
Oh my goodness. Greg, it was a shock to me. I mean, I didn't know this journal existed until about 10 years ago. So I was totally, totally stunned. I almost felt shocked physically when I held it in my hand and began to read it. You asked, was it detailed? It was very, very detailed. And actually, the very first part of my book starts with my father's journal in his own words. That's sort of the springboard for the rest of the story, which is all about the three different threads of my own life. But to go back to the journal, he wrote it in English, and I had no idea he could do this, you know, because they really had no English to speak of when they came. I don't know how he did this, but I know he did because I have it and it's in his own handwriting, which I very much recognized. He writes in the most evocative and descriptive way. Yeah. I felt like I was experiencing all the things that he talked about, and all the fear and the terror that they were living through. It was just amazing. It made me really understand so much about my parents that I had never even thought about as I was growing up. You know, my whole focus when I was growing up, we lived in a tiny little town in the state of Washington, and we were the only people like us in this town. It was a very homogeneous population. Families had lived there for generations, and we were this sort of weird little refugee family who spoke only German. You know, I had no clothes. My neighbors gave me hand-me-downs that my mother had to kind of remodel to fit me, and they never fit me quite properly. And we didn't speak English, you know. I just really had no appreciation. I hadn't thought very much about what they had gone through, because my focus was I wanted to be just like everybody else. I wanted to be an authentic American girl. And that was what I was focused on, you know. So when I read this journal, I realized how courageous and brave my parents had been, how determined they'd been, and how they persevered through such really horrendous difficulties and challenges. And as I mentioned before, you know, through it all, their optimism just shone through, and they were resilient. They were very, very focused on making a life for our family. And they were very proud, for example, when they saved and saved and saved. They had no money. My father, his first job in America was at Sears Roebuck, where this young man from Berlin, my father, was assigned to work in the Sears Roebuck farm store, where he sold chicken feed and barbed wire and all that sort of thing that he had no idea what it was all about. But he figured it out, and eventually he had a mentor at Sears who realized that he had potential to, you know, take on more responsibility and to grow in his job, all of which he did. But at the beginning, he earned $17.50 a week. And he writes in his letter, I have copies also of his letters to his parents. He writes, you know, if we're very, very frugal and we take very careful, take real care in terms of the way we spend our money, we will make it. You know, and my mother was sort of the strategist, you know, trying to figure out how are we going to make it on this $17 a week. And she was quite a manager. She really did a wonderful job, and they did. And so my father wrote, you know, in one of his early letters, he said, here in America, even the shop girls have cars. So he was just dying to get a car. Oh my goodness, he wanted a car so badly. And he saved and saved and saved his money, he and my mother, and finally they had enough money to buy a Studebaker Champion. And this was his pride and joy. And it was interesting because it was sort of a symbol of becoming an authentic American to have a car, but it was also sort of the means by which they really experienced the freedom of being able to go on the road, to go wherever they wanted. And we did go on road trips and kind of found our way through various parts of the West. And they were thrilled to have this car. You know, it just meant everything to them.
I tell you what, we're going to take our only commercial break. I wish I didn't even have to do this, but we do this and we break the program up into two halves. We'll take a commercial break. We'll be right back on the other side with Barbara Feig at 888-627-6008. On the other side of this, I want to know more about this journal. I want to know if you still have it in your possession. And if after reading it, it gave you a new insight of, oh, that's why mom and dad did this. That's why they acted like this. This is what the struggle was during that time. If it gave you a little more insight to exactly what they were going through at the time. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. We'll be back in about a minute and 20 seconds. Hang with us. Be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right, welcome back. I tell you what, I'm just looking through the book, and the pictures and everything are just absolutely awesome. We are honored tonight to have the author of My American Dream and the journey, fascism to freedom. When you got that journal, number one, how did you find that? How did you discover that journal was available?
I was sitting in my office here in New York one morning, and my phone rang, and it was my sister calling me from Annapolis, Maryland, where she lived. We talk regularly, you know, brought each other up to date on our family happenings and so forth. And my sister, Carolyn, said to me, "Barbara, I've got something amazing to tell you." I said, "Yeah, what?" And she said, "I was going through, our father had died some years ago." She said, I was going through some of our father's papers, and I found this journal that he had kept through the prelude, the run-up to the escape, and throughout the escape itself. She said, you're not going to believe this. I'm going to send it to you, and you can hold it, and you can read it, and you can see for yourself. So that's how I learned about it. And as I say, you know, this escape happened when I was 2 years old. I learned about the journal roughly 10 years ago. Maybe not even 10 years ago, maybe about 9 years ago.
Was so it in a box of storage?
A pile of loose leaf notebook paper written in his handwriting in a combination of pen and pencil. You know, just a batch of loose leaf papers. And you asked, do I have it? Yes, I do have it myself.
I bet that's a dear possession of yours.
Well, it was just the most amazing thing to know that this existed. And, you know, I thought, oh my gosh, I wish I had known about this when I could have discussed it with my parents. You know, I learned so much that I had no idea about, no idea, never asked any questions because, as I said, you know, my focus was becoming an American. I wasn't, you know, kind of going backwards. And their focus, too, was becoming Americans and kind of trying to make a life here in America. And they really didn't talk about the escape. I didn't ask questions. They didn't offer any details. They were focused on the future. And I'm sure that you know, they went through very, very difficult times. And I'm sure that they probably tried to repress some of those. And that was also probably one of the reasons why they didn't talk about it. But it was just an amazing experience to learn about it. And you asked me, did it help me to understand my parents better? Yes, absolutely. You know, my parents always impressed upon me and on my sister, as I said before, the really importance of freedom, you know, and until I understood the context in which they were thinking about that, I didn't really understand how fervently they felt that. That was something that was so important. They had come from a place where my father was persecuted. And there was no freedom. And they, you know, and his parents were murdered. And so to be in a place where there was freedom was hugely important. They also always impressed upon both my sister and me the importance, the power of education to open doors to opportunity. And I think, you know, these two ideas were sort of intertwined. In America, one had the freedom to pursue whatever it was that we wanted to. You know, we wanted to, whatever our aspirations were, we could go after them. And as you say, maybe it was step by step, but we could go after them. And education was the means whereby we could help to make that happen. And then, you know, the other thing that I didn't fully appreciate until I really not just read the journal, but sort of internalized what it meant was my mother always talked of, my mother in particular, always talked about her sort of mantra, which was to dream big, to work hard, and never quit. It sort of links back to what you were talking about at the intro, Greg. You know, think about what your goals are. What are you trying to achieve? What are you going after? How can you work hard and get there step by step? And maybe you'll slide back a little bit, but pick yourself up and be resilient and keep going. Don't quit. And all these things really became so much more meaningful to me once I understood the context that the journal helped me to really understand much more fully than I ever had before.
You know, our generations today, it seems like it took probably my mom and dad years to get into the home that they had and the cars that they drove and a lot of hard work. And then when they have children, it takes, you know, we automatically want to start at the very place where mom and dad were already at. And we forget what it was like to come from harder times. We didn't go through the Depression. We didn't go through those situations. And now my kids want to start out getting married with a house, two cars, and a dog. And it's like, wait, you have to work up to that. How did coming from nothing, $10 in your pocket, $10.50 in your dad's pocket from nothing, no home, nothing. How did that affect you with what ended up becoming one of the most successful careers of, I believe, a woman in the United States has ever had? Did you learn that, hey, what you just said, you got to dream big, you got to work hard, you got to just keep on keeping on.
Right.
Is that what it was? Was that positivity that your mom and dad have a huge
Absolutely.
Impact on you?
Absolutely. And these weren't things that we necessarily discussed, Greg. You know, I think I learned a lot through observation and osmosis and sort of, you know, a lot of sort of subconscious learning. You know, they were role models. They were role models. And you know, they really demonstrated in their life experience that really you could achieve your goals if you really, really kind of figured out what they were and then worked hard to make them happen. And as I say, it didn't always happen easily and quickly, you know, and you know, sometimes you'd go two steps forward and one step back, but you just, as you say, kept on keeping on. And that's what they did. And that was sort of my life experience with them. I learned from them just through living with them and observing them as my role models.
What's your favorite part of the book? Because it goes from this, you know, that story of your dad's journal is probably only this much of the book, because you have all of this other stuff that's in here with your family and everything and experiences that you had. What's your favorite?
Oh, what a hard question. What a hard question. Well, I don't know that I have a favorite part. You know, the story really, my father's journal is sort of the springboard to the rest of the story. And the rest of the story is about the sort of the intertwining of three threads of my own life. The first is becoming an authentic American girl. You know, in this tiny little town at Chehalis, Washington, a town of 5,000, where there was no one like us at all. And I was just so, so eager to become just like everybody else, you know. So that's one story, and that's a really important story. The second story has to do with the building of my career. And that happened in an era when I graduated from college. There were not many options for women. Women could either become nurses or teachers or typists or get married, but none of those, no two at the same time. And none of those things appealed to me. So I ended up going to business school, and I went to a program that was run jointly by Harvard Business School and Radcliffe Graduate School. It was a program for women, because women were not admitted to the Harvard Business School in that time. You know, women were really not valued. It was not felt that, I think, either by the business school or later on at the beginning of my career, I think it was felt that women were not really going to have careers anyway. They were going to get married and have babies and quit. And so there was no sense that it would be important to invest in women's education and or their careers. So I had to kind of figure out ways to get around that situation. And the graduate program that I went to was for women. We were not allowed to go to classes with the men at the Harvard Business School, although we took exactly the same classes, the same courses from the same teachers. And then when I started my career, I wanted to go into marketing. And the career building jobs in marketing were those that had profit and loss responsibility, product management or brand management. But those jobs were closed to women. Women couldn't get those jobs. So I had to go through the back door into market research, which, you know, was fine. I did that. But then it came time for me to talk to my boss, my first boss in market research, about my career path and compensation. And when I went to talk to him, I said, you know, I want to talk to you about the next step on my career path. And he just stared at me, and then he started laughing, threw back his head and just roared with laughter. And I said, well, Tom, why are you laughing? He said, career path? There is no career path. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, women. They get married, they have babies, they leave. I said, Tom, I do want to get married and I plan to have babies, but I went to business school. I plan to have a career. Well, he said, I can't help you. We don't have that here. So if that's what you want, you have to leave. So I did. And I found my way into the advertising business. So, you know, I was really kind of a pioneer in the advertising business at a time when it was a very male-dominated business. And the opportunities for building a career for women were virtually non-existent. So that is that my favorite story? That is a favorite story. They're all my favorite stories. And then
how did you get from Washington to New York?
I went to graduate school in Boston at this program that I was talking about, the Harvard Radcliffe program in business administration. And then I knew when I finished that program that I wanted to go into marketing. And really the center of where marketing happened was New York. So I thought, again, I didn't know, it was like my parents didn't know anybody, didn't have a job, didn't have any friends, didn't have a place to live, nothing. But I thought, you know, I'm going to try this and see if I can make it work. And I did. I found a job quickly and I found a roommate and you know, and eventually I was married to my husband, whom I had met at the Harvard Business School. So
that turned into an unbelievable marriage, right? Because
a great marriage.
Over 50 years?
Yes. Yeah. you know, and when you talk about my favorite, that's another favorite story.
Well, yeah, your family is gorgeous, Barbara.
Well, thank you. I love
them
dearly.
These pictures of you all smiling and laughing at Thanksgiving are just unbelievable.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You know, we haven't even scratched the surface. I'd love to have you come back on. But as we enter in the last couple minutes, what do you want? And what was your heart? Was it just, hey, I want to put my memoir out there for legacy purposes? Or was it to change people's attitudes towards anti-Semitism? Or was it how to deal with grief, trauma in a life when cancer enters into, you know, and takes people away that you love? What was your ultimate goal to accomplish by writing this beautiful book?
I wrote it initially for my sons and my grandchildren and future generations. And the reason why I did, after I had my father's journal, I thought, gee, I don't want my kids and their kids and future generations to be as ignorant of what came before them as I have been of what came before me. Because I think what comes before us is very important in terms of making us who and what we are. So that was the first thing. And then, you know, it kind of found its way around. And a lot of people who read it, you know, said, gee, you want to take this out into the marketplace. This is really interesting. And, so that's what I did. And in terms of what I hope people take away from it, I think three things importantly. First of all, I think it's so important to appreciate freedom that we have in the United States and to do everything that we can to protect that freedom. Second thing is, I hope they come away with the understanding that there's huge power in education to open doors to opportunity. Yeah. And finally, my mantra, dream big, work hard, never quit. I always thought to myself, if I could inspire just one person to come away with that attitude, I would feel like I made a difference. And I'd like to make a difference.
Beautiful. Well, this sure did, at least in my heart. How can people get a hold of the book? And I want to know about your website. They want to get this book right now. How's the best way to do it?
They can buy it wherever they buy their books, Amazon, any bookstores where they buy their books, or go to my website, Barbara Fagin, FEIGIN, one word, lowercase, .com, and you'll learn more about me, more about the book, and you'll be able to click on and actually buy the book from the website.
And there's a lot of other things on your website, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you go out speaking, Barbara?
A little bit, yes. I've begun to do that.
Okay. I'll tell you what, it has been a joy to have you on the program today. I can't thank you enough. I did a quick read, but I'm going to go back and do an in-depth read because I want to have you come back on and I want to find out how you have the resiliency that you had, the grit that you had to be able to get through being the only woman in a boardroom in some of these meetings and how you came out of that still smiling like you are now. And to be one of the, at least from my point of view, from what I've read about you, one of the most legendary people in our business world as a woman. Just unbelievable.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's been wonderful talking with you.
Well, great. Sorry I didn't go by the list of all the questions because I never do that. But you did awesome. You told your story, and that's exactly what I want. And this is going to hopefully get on this, folks, tonight. Buy this book. I highly, highly recommend it. And Barbara, I don't say that.
Take one more look.
That's a hard copy.
This is a soft copy.
And you can get it on Kindle, too. And the pictures are gorgeous. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's been wonderful chatting.
Okay. We'll talk soon. I want to have you back. I'll talk to Kim
Okay.
And try to get you rescheduled for another program.
Great.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you for staying up late for us too tonight. As we do each and every week, I always like to end the program with, and what a better, there's not a better way to end the program than it is tonight with, no matter what has happened, no matter what the past has done to your family, to you, no matter how dark it is, folks, there's hope. You got to keep on believing. Keep on dreaming and never give up. And you don't have to do this alone. Get this book. This will tell you maybe an insight of what people don't know about what's going on in our world, because it opened my eyes to really what it's all about. If we don't understand and recognize history, folks, we will have to experience it again. This isn't about politics. This is about humanity and freedom in our country. I highly recommend My American Dream, and never give up on your dream. No matter what country you're listening to this tonight, you have hope where you're at too. Keep looking for it. Never give up. God bless you. Join us next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence from Houston, Texas. Have an awesome, awesome week. And we'll talk to you next week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.